Hey everybody, my name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic and drug addict. My sober date's 6:05 a.m. Monday morning, November 9th, 1998. At that particular moment, it was a Monday morning, the sun was shining. It was 6:05. And I had a little thing that I smoked crack with, you know, pipe. It was about that small because I kept breaking it. So I had this little bit left, and I had this bottle. It had a handle on it. It's a plastic bottle. So I guess it was at least a half gallon of vodka. I took that last hit. I threw the pipe on the stem on the ground. I was barefooted. I was in my bedroom. And I stepped on it. I didn't feel it. And then I took that bottle, I turned it over, and it was about three drops. Last three drops of alcohol I ever took. And I threw it against the wall. It bounced off the wall because it was plastic. You know, I was one of them guys, when I started off, I was drinking, good shit. And then at the end, it was not so good shit, you know? Because I had spent most of my money on crack cocaine, you know? So you drink the cheap alcohol, and so you could maintain that high. I only smoked crack cocaine for 3.5 months. But 3.5 months of crack cocaine did for me what 35 years of drinking and every other drug in the world could not do. When I smoked crack cocaine, I became a devil, and I smoked it 5 days at a time, passed out, and wake up and come to in 5 more days. And my plan was to smoke crack cocaine and drink vodka until I died. So that didn't happen. That morning, I'm going to get back to, I'll tell you, you know, what it was like was hell. Y'all know what it was like. Y'all have been there. I hope you've gone to hell and come back. I hope that y'all are at the end of your line. I hope that you start and continue to do the work, which is the 12 steps. Because that's the only thing that saved me. No human power. My children. Nobody. Nothing on this earth was going to keep me from doing what I was doing. And that's the truth. So anyway, I get in bed and I lay down, and I had this clock, a West clock. It had the digital 8, you know, the red numbers, big red numbers. They were too white. And I was just cruising for what was exactly 2 hours. Because at 8:05, 2 hours to the minute later, there was a knock on my window. And I was just getting down, coming down enough to just, you know, get into my pass out mode. I woke up and I came to and I said, "Who's there?" And it's me, Dad. Open up the door. My 20-year-old son, Michael Jr. I said, "Go away, boy. I'm trying to get some sleep." "Dad, open up the door. Didn't you hear me? I said I'm trying to get some sleep. Go away." "Dad, if you don't open up the fucking door, I'm going to kick it in." Damn. Talk about ruining a high. So I said, "God, hold on." So I got up and I walked down the hall into the kitchen, and I unlocked the 15 deadbolts. Just one. I left the shade up, and he was standing there. I unlocked the door, and I opened the door up, and I I said, what's going on? He said, let me come in. So I couldn't even look it in the eye. So I was looking down. I said, come on in. So I turned around, walked back into my bedroom, down the hall, got into bed. He walks in the room. And my ex-girlfriend walks in the room. Then one of my best male friends walks in the room. And then my ex-wife walks in the room. And it just happened to be cleaning day. And the cleaning woman walked in. She met him outside. I didn't know it was cleaning day. She was going to come over to clean the house. She wasn't going to get in. But she was there. And she said, they said, come on, you can come on in and be part of this intervention. And she had 3 years sober. I used to drink and snort cocaine with her. So I used to hang out at a place called the Hole in the Wall down on Guadalupe. I did a 12-year, hitch. Picture on the wall of shame. Had my little plaque that said Doc. That was me. They called me Doc. And if I wasn't at home, I was there. I drank at bars until after hours or before. But I spent a lot of money and a lot of time in that place from 1986 to 1998. So I'm looking at these people, and they're all standing, five of them are standing around my bed, and I'm going, and they're not saying nothing. They're just looking at me. What seemed like a long, long time, which was only about 5 seconds. I said, so what the hell are y'all doing here all at the same time? This is quite a coincidence. Nobody said a word, which seemed like forever, which was another 5 seconds. My son looked me in the eye and he said, Dad, you need help. And I looked back at him and I said, you're right. I need help. I need help. So I said those three words and something happened. What happened was I call it divine intervention. Through that 20-year-old, my son, he was the messenger that carried from the man upstairs. And they caught me at the right moment. So I said, well, what are we going to do?
Can I move this thing up?
It's stuck where it is. Oh, here we go. Yeah. So, that's evasive, man. Just kidding. So you know where my mind goes. When you're reading how it works, it says, what an order. I can't go through with it. And where I sobered up, we used to say after that, bullshit. I sobered up a place called Northland. And I'd go to noon, 5:30, and 8 o'clock. And I came out here for 14 years. I came out here, and I was part of down the street when Austin Recovery was on Rio Grande and MLK. There was a mansion. Across the street was Stratford House. And the women in detox were in the building behind the mansion. Nobody's old enough to even remember that. Nobody? Okay. Well, thank you, ma'am. Thank you. That was before we went to Cross Park, and then from Cross Park we came over here. So that day that I said I give up, and then I said, well, what are we going to do? And my son said, we're going to take you out to Dripping, to where he lived and his mother, and we're going to get you into Austin Recovery. So, first of all, I said, I got to get some sleep. Because I got to get some sleep. And they said, we'll give you 2 hours. So I went to sleep. I know what it is to sleep for 2 hours. I was in the military during Vietnam. I know what it is not to sleep. So 10 o'clock, they came back and woke me up. I got dressed. We went down to Austin Recovery. And I talked to a man named Bud H. And he said, we don't have a bed. Come back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. So I went out to Dripping Springs to spend that night. Next day I came back, went into treatment, didn't go to detox, went straight into treatment. Somehow they didn't get the memo when I wrote down, I drank and smoked crack. So I went through a 28-day inpatient treatment program. And during that 28 days, I slept 5.5 hours. I go upstairs to room 201, and I close my eyes, and I lay there. Like the brain would not shut off. And they told me when the body has enough, the mind will shut down. When the body gets tired enough, the mind will shut down. Don't leave. So I ain't going nowhere. I ain't going nowhere. And there was a period of time, like I said, I've been through the war, I've been through this and that, and I went yada yada. I'm not going to tell you all the bullshit. Cat's got 9 lives. I've been through 6 on death's doorstep. 2 overdoses on cocaine, 1 on heroin, 1 drowning on the North Shore of Hawaii in 1969 when I was in the Navy. Two other. Overdoses that I got heat stroke, went into a, didn't die. The man upstairs had another plan. And I totally believe that 100% with all my heart. I grew up a Catholic. I grew up baptized a Catholic. I'm going to give you a little bit up until, and then we'll get back to the treatment center. I was born on December 23rd, 1946. I'll be 73 years old in December. I know I look pretty good for a 72-year-old. Thank you. Point being, I was born in Newark, New Jersey, in an Italian neighborhood. My mother was Italian. My father was something else. My first language was Italian because we lived with my grandmother, my mother's mother. And she wouldn't allow, she would speak to me in Italian, and I would listen to her, and she taught me these prayers, which of some of them I still remember today. When we were in 1951, my father worked for the Prudential Insurance Company, so we got 600 families were transferred to Houston, Texas. So we signed up in 1951. We moved to Houston, and we bought a house out in Southwest Houston. I think my daddy paid $11,000 for this 2-bedroom house, brand new. It was in the neighborhood off Beach Nut and Hillcroft. I grew up 6 miles from Sugar Land. I grew up 6 miles from Richmond, Texas. Richmond, Texas is where I lost my virginity. in a black whorehouse when I was 15 years old. It was all guns and no roses. You know, from the time I was a kid, I got a BB gun and a pellet gun, a .22 and a shotgun. And then I started getting into pistols. Our pastime was drink beer, drive down the road. At the time, there was things called newspapers. They'd roll them up, and there was a newspaper guy. So they throw the newspapers. So we collect newspapers and we drive down to the neighborhoods with it, and go real fast and, you know, come upon the mailbox. Bam! Throw the newspaper and knock the mailboxes off their stand. Yeah! Yeah. And then we'd go out and shooting on Bray's Bayou. I grew up on a bayou when it was wild. I like snakes. So I collected snakes. When I was 14 years old, I had 2 6-foot-long water moccasins as pets. And I was, so, you know, as you can tell, as we go along here, I can, you know, we all have stories to tell. But I always pushed it to the limit. Everything I did, I pushed it to the limit. Everything. Everything I did, everything I ate, everything I thought, everything was pushed over the limit. So I walked an edge, like most of us or some of us do, more or less than others, but we still get to that point. And the reason that I keep saying I didn't die and I'm here today and it was divine intervention is because the man had another plan. And the plan is to be standing here right now telling you my story and carrying the message of the 12 steps. I'm a 12 steps bumper. This is my 6th little red book since I've been sober. I went through 5 of them. And I just got this one not too long ago. It's brand new. And I carry it in my car, in the side panel. And when I come here, I put it in my back pocket. And when I go to a meeting, I put it in my back pocket. So I've got my weapon. I've got the truth right here in this book. There's some things, you know, there's some, the first 164 pages, y'all got one of these little, you know what these books are, what this book is, you ever seen it? You have? Did you give them away here? Oh, well, same thing, first 164 pages. This thing's got a, if you go out of town, go to any country, it's got the number of the intergroup, and it's got all kinds, it's got a dictionary in it, which explaining all kinds of shit, and it's built... Everything, you know, that you don't know. They also got a big book dictionary. It's a little white thing. It has about 1,000 different words that explains everything in the first 164 pages. So if you get stumped, you can get one of them. When you get out of here, get online. How many of y'all are in treatment? How many of y'all are alumni? Damn, all right. So where was I? So we get back to the thing. I'm going to go through the beginning again. First, I had my first drink when I was 3 years old, and I put it off as long as I could. That's a joke, but it's the truth. I used to go around my mother. They used to have parties up there when I was a kid. I remember all the parties. You know, back then they were drinking highballs and martinis and Manhattans. God damn, they were good. And everybody had little stirs. So I'd go around. You know, I was the only child. That was a real drag. That's another reason, one of the reasons why that I say today that I turned out the way I did. But I turned out the way I did because I was a selfish, self-centered, dishonest little peckerwood. And that's my problem. That's the root of my problem. And it's the root of your problem, too. Yeah, you, Donnie. It tells me in this book. And so when I accepted that and decided that it was time to start acting different, because when we start acting different, we start behaving different. And when we start behaving different, we get a different reaction. We get a different action. We don't have to react anymore. We just start, we act different, behave different, and we can stay sober. And the way I did that is through the 12 steps. And like I said, I was a Catholic, baptized a Catholic, and went to Catholic school from kindergarten through the 12th grade in Houston. And back then it was, we're talking in the 50s, and I graduated high school in 1965. In 1965, in my world, that's when everything changed. The next year we went to started going to Vietnam, and the whole United States, everything changed, everything. And when I was in the sixth grade, something happened. I went to confession. You all know what that is? If you're a Catholic, you do. So I was 12 years old, and I went to confession, and there was a priest, and all the priests were drunks. And, I mean, they were alcoholics, the ones at our parish. They lived in a rectory, and the nuns lived in their convent. I was taught by nuns. And Sister Eileen, she was the first one on my resentment list. She was not a nice lady. Father Zimmer was hearing my confession. And at 12 years old, you know, you start becoming a man. So, you know, you tell him what you're doing, you know. Hey, what's up? So I telling this, and he's back there on the other side of the cloth, and he's drunk as shit. And he starts screaming, "You did what? You beat off how many times? You mean you don't your parents take you to church?" And I went, "Holy shit." And I was just like blown away. And I got up and I went outside and closed the door and standing there holding the door closed, you know, not knowing what to do. And all my peers were sitting there laughing because they knew what was going on because they were doing the same thing. But I was mortified. And that's when I lost the Catholic God of my religion. That's when it became me. So from the sixth grade to eighth grade, I went two more years. And I went to high school, a place called Marion High School. It said, well, the girls are girls, or so are the boys. It was 600 total enlistment, 200 boys and 400 girls. It's pretty cool. But back in the 1960s, the girls weren't as liberal as they are or have evolved into. So, you know, we had to go elsewhere for our thrills. I got out of 1965. I went to University of Houston for 2 years, and I flunked out because alcohol got in the way. I hadn't done any drugs up until then. But in 1967, after 2 years of, in 67, Vietnam was in full blast. And you were either 1A or 4F, which is a student in college, so you could keep going if you didn't flunk out. Or if you did, as soon as you quit school, you became 1A, which means that you were on the draft list. It was what we called a draft back then. So instead of getting drafted in 1967, I joined the Navy. And because I had 2 years, even though I'd flunked out, they gave me a E3 status, seaman status. And they gave me 120 days and paid me an active reserve to get things squared away 4 months before I had to go into boot camp. So I didn't have a girlfriend at that time. But you know how the consequences are, how situations are. You know, you're getting ready to go off and you don't have any ties and nothing. Damned if I didn't meet this little Catholic girl that went to St. Agnes. And I just fell in love. 4 months later, I took off and I went to boot camp in San Diego. Made it through boot camp, came home, you know, my little Dixie cap, you know. Here I am, blue stripe. Radio man. Radio man, seaman. I was a radio man in the Navy. And we were still, she was still waiting for me. But then when I went back to San Diego, I went to three schools. I went to basic electronic and electricity school, I went to radio man A school, and I went to high speed code school. I was, and then I got a top secret crypto clearance. I was one of the guys that was, actually I was on the recovery 12 and 13 recovery team in Apollo. I was the high speed code man out of everybody. I was the guy that could sit with a typewriter with earphones, listening to five letters come across and type, 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 five at a time, go through. And I was the, broke the record at school when I was in school. I could receive 32 words a minute. And 22 was qualifying, but I kept going and going. So they said, all right, we're going to give you a special. So at, anyway, we get to I'm 20 years old in boot camp because I had 2 years of college. So when I get home in 1967, I was got home the 21st of December out of boot camp, and I turned 21 2 days later. So I turned 21 in the service. Then I went back to California to go to all these schools, and I could drink, and I could go out and drink. And I could come, you know, back then there was a place where you go on base. I forgot what the hell it is. It's something quarters. At any rate, you go drinking, and, you know, if you, then you could go home. You got this near beer that they served. But I could go out to the bars. And so I started drinking, you know, after I got out as soon as I could. Still hadn't done any drugs. So a year later, I finished school, and I'm an E4. I made rank just like that. I took the test, and so in 2 years, in 1 year, I made E4, which was as soon as you could do it. And they gave me orders to Naval Communications Station, Honolulu, Hawaii. So I moved to Hawaii. And I spent 2 years over there. I was in satellite communications, and I worked in a technical control center. And I got a top secret crypto clearance, and I was Mr. Cool. E4, tell me what to do. Go do this. So from the time I can remember, I was given orders. I was in charge. So you carry that with you. When once you think you're Mr. Cool, you got to stay cool. So it seems like all my life after that, things that happened were, you know, I worked in detox from 2000 to 2002 over at Cross Park. And one day the boss came in and she says, I'm the boss. You're not running this place. And I went, well, I know that, Catherine. And she said, okay, well, we just want to get that right. And I worked 2 years in the field, in detox. I was a tech. And they kept promising me, this is working for this place. But at that time, it was called ARC, Austin Recovery Center. And I worked until I got sick. Where I started getting real sick, and I didn't know what was going on after I sobered up. And finally, when I went to the doctor and they did a blood test, you got hep C. Well, no wonder, we'll get back to that. And so they never gave me allowed me to be a counselor intern. They said, we need you right where you are, because I'd be there from 3 in the afternoon to 11 at night. It was me and a nurse and 22 detoxing men and women. And I was And they called me the little general because we didn't take any shit. If we're going to do this or we're not. And, you know, that's the way it was. And that's the way I grew up, you know, I grew up free-spirited and then people giving orders. And you know how it is when you get orders? I don't take orders real good. You know, if you ask me nice, I might do it. But you're going to do this. No, I ain't. You know, that's black. No, it ain't. It's white. That's up. No, it ain't. That's down. And, you know, and that's the way it was. And if you didn't like it, we'll fight. And I got my ass kicked all the time. But I fought. Last night, this guy was talking about the joint. I was sitting there going, okay, what's the point? You know, you know, so you got your ass kicked. You know, and I got. Was anybody here last night? I was a pretty good speaker. But I didn't hear any recovery. The point is that we get out of self. First of all, we got step one, rigorous honesty. We admitted we were powerless. We, first word and first step. We. See this board here? I've done many four-step teachings on this board right here, I think. I used to come out here and do a four-step study with the men for many years. And then prior to that, this and that. Because when I got sober and got out of treatment, I didn't want to drink, but I wanted to, still had the obsession for crack cocaine. And they said, okay, when the obsession comes, when the thought comes, it's just a thought. Don't go act on it. Pause. Take a deep breath. Go upstairs. Ask God to take it away. And then call somebody and then get your ass to a meeting. And if it lasts 10 minutes, you have another 10 minutes. And yeah, and then I said, well, yeah, you son of a bitches didn't tell me there was 6 to an hour, 24 hours a day. And when I got out of treatment, I did what I was told. I did what I was told for the first time because I didn't know what else to do. And I didn't have anything else to do. So I jumped on in the water all the way, submerged myself. I said, don't stick your toes in. Jump on in all the way and submerge. Get all wet and do the work. That's the work right there. Those 12 steps changed my life. And it's changed a lot of people's lives in this room because they did the 12 steps. They call it work. I call it life. Change of life. You do them as honestly and as thorough as we can. So when we start off, we do it the best we can. The only thing we got to do 100% is the first part of the first step. We admitted we were powerless over whatever. That's the only part that we have to do 100%. The slash in between that our lives had become unmanageable. As you go through, if you don't think your life is unmanageable, keep working the steps. And that'll come to you. Point being. So I'm going back and forth. That damn coffee's pretty strong. Shit. I said I needed some coffee. I don't drink coffee at night. So I was just laying around all day watching football, and I came, you know, here I am, you know. I said, all right, go do your thing. Just tell the truth. So I got to tell you all the truth because that's what we do. We tell the truth, not my truth. So anyway, 2 years in Hawaii, and then I go get orders to Southeast Asia, Cameron Bay, Vietnam. And I go over there and I got it made. I'm doing this and that, and I'm on an ammunition ship, and I'm the radio man. And back in the day, they said 2 weeks, your first 2 weeks, your last 2 weeks is when you're apt to get whacked, your chances of getting shot or wounded. And here I am, 13 days left on my tour before I got on the plane to come back to the United States. And I was in an explosion. And I took a 2-inch piece of shrapnel right here, right under the belly button and above the private. And I look down and I'm on fire, so I grab it and pull it out. And then, so I push myself in together and pull myself together and scream, "Corbin!" And so the corpsman comes. The first thing he does is hit me with morphine. And I liked it. And that's when I became a junkie. I didn't do any heroin in Vietnam. I smoked pot and, you know, drank and did all kinds of other stuff. But I didn't ever get into heroin. Because that's when heroin, that's in the beginning, that's where it came from. A lot of soldiers were bringing it back, you know. A lot of soldiers and anybody got strung out over there. That's when the addiction became international, man. I mean, anyway, you guess we would have to have been there. At any rate, I get back. I go to, I stayed there for another 25 days. So I was 12 days over getting out. I flew back to Balboa Hospital in San Diego, and I did a rehab there. And I got out, and I went back to Houston. I went back to Houston, and when I came back from, I brought a half a pound of red Lebanese hash and a pound of pie sticks with me. When I came, got out of service, put in my duffel bag and came home because there was no customs. You could carry as much dope as you wanted and not get away with it. And so I became a dope dealer. And I did that for a long time. In 1972, when Richard Nixon got elected, and things started going downhill, I said, "Fuck this, and fuck y'all. I'm going to Mexico." So I moved to Puebla, Mexico, a little town outside of Puebla, way down in the interior. And the government's going to pay me $250 a month to go to school at the University of the Americas. So I went down there and I became a student again. And as I became a student, I learned how to do things, you know, oh, this is where the real shit is, you know, and real cheap. So I took advantage of every opportunity, and I'm not going to get into anything, you know, as far as where it took me. It took me to some dark places, too. I got back here, 1974. I was living down there, and this gal came down, three gals came down and to visit. One of them was an ex-boyfriend, a girlfriend of one of the guys I was going to school with for us. And we went down there, and it was like, I met this gal, this woman, and she lived in Austin. And she, we were together 6 days, and I took her to Tosco, Silver City, and we went around to show her around. And I was Mr. Cool because I was a Texas boy, and I had my Volkswagen van, you know, and we were from Texas, so we were the coolest son of a bitch that don't fuck with us. So when she's getting on a bus, go to Puebla, get on a plane to fly back to Austin, she took one step up and turned around. She said, "Mike," she said, "I love you." And I went, she said, "When you come on home, come on up to Austin." And 2 weeks later, I was on my, packed my stuff and was driving to Austin, Texas. And I've been here ever since. And she became my wife. She gave me 2 kids, and I got 3 grandkids. While I was with that woman, in the beginning, one day we're standing around, and just, somebody had the idea to do some heroin. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So, Mr. Mann was doing the get to shooting, and they're all two girl, woman, girl, boom, you know. And then he already, and then this other girl was over here, and she'd get it, and then he come over and hit me right there. That's where all the money went. It's a hole in daddy's arm where all the money went. And I said, so what's the fucking big deal? And he looked at me and he said, man, you didn't get off? I said, no. He said, oh, shit, if you ever get into this stuff, you're just going to be, damn. So I did another balloon, and, I got a buzz. And so I experimented with it for 6 months, and then I became, I said, well, let's get the total experience. So I did heroin for a year and a half after that. And then I quit doing heroin because I was getting, my wife was fixing to have my second kid. And my dope dealer come driving over to the house, and he says, I wasn't even going to do this. Yeah, I know. I wasn't even going to do this. I apologize. Heroin, did that for 2 years. Cocaine for 25 years. Shooting, doing every other drug in between. My drug of choice is more. That I ended up smoking crack for 3 months, and here we are, 20 years later. That's my drug story. All right. Damn, it's like I was back in detox over there telling my damn story. You want to hear a fucking story? I'll tell you a story, boy. Yeah, but whoa, what? No, yeah. Been there, done that, graduated, and got all the T-shirts. So what? So what? We don't have to go that far. So anyway, we get into back to treatment. Get out of treatment, and my son picks me up at 9 o'clock in the morning over there at Stratford House. He says, what do you want to do? I said, let's go eat breakfast. When I got into treatment, I weighed 137 pounds. I was emaciated, and I gained 40 pounds in 28 days. And they gave me double rations. Old Woody. Good old Woody, the old cook. They gave me double portions, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I was eating double portions. And when lunch came, I was famished. And when dinner came, and at night we'd have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And we'd get up 6 o'clock in the morning. And at 6 o'clock, we could come downstairs, go outside, smoke 3 cigarettes, get some coffee, come back in. And this was did it. And back then it was, you do this, and you do this, and you do not be late. If you're late, you'll give you 1 strike, 2 strikes, 3 strikes, you're out of here. And this is what we do. It was hardcore. Our recreation was 2 hours on Saturday at Peace Park, right down the hill. It was what I needed. We had to make our beds, we had to clean ourselves, we had to, we had to do everything by the book. It's kind of like boot camp. So I get out of treatment, me and my son go to breakfast. I said, now what do you want to do? He said, I didn't have a car because I burnt my car. I gave my car to a crack dealer, and it was a diesel, and he went and put gasoline in it. And he ended up, he gave it back to me. I almost came off a run one day. I come home and knock on the door at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's the fire department. My car is, hood's up, my car, the engine blew up. And I was sitting laying in the living room sleeping, passed out and didn't even know it. And I just went, okay, thanks. What? So he took me to Northland. He dropped me off. And I went to the noon meeting, and then at the noon meeting I told him, I said, I just got here. I just got out of treatment. And I don't have a car. Somebody said, let's go to lunch. And they took me to lunch, and we went back, and I hung around there. They let me hang around there, even though it wasn't in the, whatchamacallit? I'm losing my thought. But I hung around till 5:30, and I did the 5:30 meeting. I got out of there, and I hung around, and we went to dinner. Somebody took me to dinner, and went to 8 o'clock. And I did that for about 2 years, 3 meetings a day. Prior to that, I would go to, found a 6 o'clock meeting at Living Faith. And then they had an 8:30 meeting at Western Trails. So there were some days I'd do five meetings a day. And I got a sponsor and I started doing the work. And I did the work as thoroughly and honestly as I could. And I did a thorough and honest four-step, put all my shit down there. And when I sat in front of that man, he said, have you ever had sexual intercourse with any farm animals? I said, what the fuck did you say? And he said, you heard me. It's a yes and no answer. And I said, no. He says, well, now you can tell me anything. Okay. So I told him everything. Everything at that time that I had that, and I got through that fourth, fifth step, and it wasn't no, you know, white light experience. It was something that I already knew, because I knew I was a selfish, self-centered, dishonest little peckerwood from the time I was 5 years old. And if you don't know that, you are. I'm telling you, and I don't even know you, because that's the root of our problem. And then I did, you know, that's the 6 and 7, and I said, all right, I'm going to give it up. You take it. I was ready. I'm ready. You take it. And they told me, you start praying. You start asking God for help. You start seeking. You start seeking. You read page 84 through 88 every morning, even though you ain't there yet, step 10 and 11. And you start, continue in step 10. To take inventory. So, you know, what about continue? Don't you understand? My sponsor says. And I said, I know what that means. He says, well, continue. And then he says, seek. Not sought, seek. So today, I continue, take personal inventory. I get out in the morning, make my connection, spiritual connection, because that's the meat and potatoes of this whole damn thing. All the other stuff is bullshit. Not bullshit. All the other stuff is important. Meetings, sponsor, da-da-da-da-da-da. But the meat and potatoes is a spiritual connection with the higher power of your understanding. If you've got that and you hold on to that and you grow and maintain that, you will never have to drink and drug again in this lifetime. And it says when all else fails, you go help another alcoholic or drug addict. So, hell, I don't know if I'm giving y'all any help. But that's why I'm here tonight. You know, I sponsor, if I sponsor and they call me 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll call, I'll answer the phone. And then, you know, they start whining and crying. I said, you pray on it? And they said, well, and I'll hang up. So I said, pray on it and hang up. Tell them to call me back. We either do this or we don't. We either stay clean and sober or we don't. And if we do have the opportunity to get out of here and we don't do the work, not if, but when, the time will come when we have no mental defense and we might get high or drunk again. So my suggestion, men and women, is to get after it. When you get out of here, you get your sponsor. And you start doing those steps. And you get this little red book or that big blue book and you read the first 164 pages. And if it takes you 6 months to read the damn thing, it takes you 6 months. It took me 6 months to be able to put a paragraph together. But I did it. I did it because my life depended on it. And I didn't want to go back to the way I was. Today, you know, they say you're happy, joyous, and free. Well, happiness is an inside job. Joy is from the heart. Freedom that you get after you do the ninth step. And there's ninth-step promises. The freedom is that I got from doing my ninth step is when everything accumulated and the program, I woke up. I woke up and went, I'm free. I walk down the street and don't worry about who I'm going to run to. Don't have to worry about who's in back of me. And I'm free. Today I'm kind of happy. I'm joyous and I'm free. To carry the message to y'all, that if you do this, you will get better, not cured, and your life will change. Life will still happen, but you'll be able to walk through. Instead of living in fear, you can live in love. Thank you.